Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Some prefer garlic. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
And Power with a high fly ball to deep right field at the wall. Car rushed. Ball going. Ball gone. Another leadoff home run for Fernando Tatis Jr. Yesterday in Seattle. Twice against the Orioles in the homestand previous to this one that opens tonight. Opposite field. There's nothing he cannot do.
Ted Leitner with the call on the Padres radio network. Consider Ted a friend. All the times I've run into him, whether it happened to be with San Diego State football, basketball, and he's done the Padres, and Ted always does a great job. Great guy. Really great guy. Appreciates what he does very much.
Is Coach Fisher still with San Diego State basketball?
No.
I could
no.
say he's gone now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's retired, yeah.
Yeah. Not a bad run, and it'd be fun to announce his games when he was coaching.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've announced Steve Fisher's games, just not for the team he was coaching.
Sort of on the other side of the floor.
I've been on the other side, yes. Yeah, yeah. I've done that before, but, you know, it's but Ted does a great job. I don't know how much of the Nate Bauer part you heard. I think Kyle said we heard most of it.
Not really. I don't know that we did hear Bauer stuff.
Okay. I think, you know, he had some interesting observations as to what's going on with Penn State football. Certain things that he's looking for. He thinks that defensively, he's looking at the defensive tackles, for example, as being, you know, there's certain guys that you know are givens going into the season on a football team. A Yitor Gross Matos, a Micah Parsons. So who is under the radar that can make a difference between being a good and great defense? And he was talking about the defensive tackles, and he mentioned Antonio Shelton in particular. So then I flipped it around. I said, okay, now let's get to the offense. Yeah, and he mentioned a guy like Journey Brown, for example.
Not a name we've heard a lot of.
Journey Brown is the kind of guy that has speed. Everybody knows that. So everybody knows Journey Brown can flat out fly, especially when you get him into the open field, can flat out fly. Where he is better than people realize, and there's usually several things about a player where somebody is better than where people realize. And he's a better guy running between the tackles than people realize. And that part's really important, that he is better at between the tackles than some people, I think, would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that means you can use him on an every-down basis. Mac Hippenhammer was the other guy he identified. Mac Hippenhammer is going to be somebody that you saw him play last year, but you didn't see him in the spring because he was playing baseball. Every once in a while when something like that happens, you tend to fall off somebody's radar because, you know, you're out of sight, out of mind for the moment. Well, he's come back to football, better body. I mean, it looks like the offseason work has helped him out because he needed that. We all know he needed that. And he's been very consistent catching the ball. That really helps with what they're doing. So, I mean, those are the guys that he identified as a couple of those under the radar who can make you really, really good as to being, as opposed to being okay to good.
Steve, I thought in the interview that he did not mention any of the other linebackers other than we all know about Micah Parsons being the kingpin of the defense. But no other linebackers were mentioned.
Well, but you know what? Cam Brown is the best all-around linebacker out there. He's the best all-around linebacker. The ability to play the run, the pass, a veteran, been around the block, nothing out there that he hasn't seen before, and he is the acknowledged leader. He's the guy that gets up, and he is the one that will say something to everybody out of the gate. So Micah Parsons is an obvious guy, and Micah Parsons has a chance to be, again, tremendous. We know that.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Okay, but Cam Brown is still the older, acknowledged leader of that group. And when you put both Brown and Parsons together out there, now you've got a combination that it can be at times dynamic. They're two guys that you don't want off the field. You don't want those two guys off the field.
I have a nickname for them when they're on the field: Thunder and Lightning.
Well, they're good. I mean, and not only that, but they have length. So Jack Ham talks about this all the time. As somebody who knows the position better than anybody on the planet. And when you are a linebacker with length and you understand the proper depth of a drop into a zone, now the quarterback has to account not just for your presence in the area, they have to account for your length and the ability to get the ball over you to said receiver. And I've always pointed this out as an example. When Penn State beat Ohio State in 2005, one of the key plays of the game in the first half was Calvin Lowry's interception that he brought back to the two-yard line. Then eventually Michael Robinson scored after that. The key to the entire play was Paul Posluszny dropping into a zone, because Posluszny really knew how to play the pass, dropping into a zone, and Troy Smith, who a year later would win the Heisman Trophy, had to throw the ball over Posluszny to make the play. And in the process of doing that, he overthrew it, and Lowry just had to play center field because of Posluszny's presence. And that's where guys like Parsons and Brown can make a big difference in the pass game. And you can go nickel, for example. You can go nickel out there and leave those two linebackers in there and still feel like you have a good handle on the opposing team's pass game with the sub package you're using.
Speaking of Paul Posluszny, whatever happened to him, Steve? Where did he? I'm only kidding. Only kidding.
I think he had a good career.
Apparently so. Seemed to do quite well after Penn State.
Yeah, between the Bills and the Jags, he did really well. Made a lot of money. I was glad the Jags finally made the playoffs, where he could get into a playoff game with them, because he had accepted the money to go down there play.
He was one, obviously, a true fan favorite of Nittany Lion fans everywhere, because he put his heart into every play.
Oh, he did. I mean, you think about the linebacking core they had.
Oh, I remember.
They had Dan Connor. They had him, and they had Sean Lee.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, I watched Dan Connor in high school. He was Strathaven High School, Philadelphia suburb, big powerhouse back then. And the Berwick Bulldogs played them in the state playoff game. Dan Connor, middle linebacker and fullback. I don't know which one of the positions was more devastating. He crushed almost single-handedly a very, very good Berwick team in the state playoffs. And then it was like he's going to Penn State, and they got Posluszny and Sean Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy!
Yeah. Well, Sean Lee was Sean Lee. Eventually, if he wants to be, can be an outstanding coach on any level. I don't care if it's college or the NFL. He can be an outstanding coach in any level because Sean understands the game. And I think he has been Van Der Esch, whom, let's give the Cowboys credit, turned out to be an outstanding first-round pick out of Boise State. And when Sean was out last year, Van Der Esch stepped in and played really well. Well, who was the one tutoring him along the way? It was Sean Lee.
Well, you know, and Steve, during the games, the broadcast of the games with the Cowboys, you'd see Sean Lee on the sideline with a headset on and communicating. Right. That tells you quite a bit right there, that the coaching staff trust him to do the job.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the only problem he's had, and it's a big problem, but keeping yourself out there for 16 games in an NFL season, which is when you start hearing all this rhetoric about an 18-game schedule. I understand where the 18-game schedule is coming from completely. The 18-game schedule is coming from the NFL commissioner and from ownership because they're talking inventory. With the new TV contract coming up, I want to say in 2 years, they want to put more inventory out there to get more money.
Yeah, like they need it.
Again, what is the stated goal? And they've stated this. What's the stated goal of the National Football League? They want to be a $25 billion business. Right now, they're in that $15 to $18 billion range. Their stated goal is to be a $25 billion business.
Well, if you go to 18 games, I think that's, in one sense, really nice because you can have the NCAA Final Four and the Super Bowl on the same weekend in March or early April, the way it goes.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't like it.
No.
And not only that, the beating that the players take over 16 games is already tremendous. And then they floated this idea of, well, you can play 16 games and hold out two. Okay, now you're the fan, and you've got tickets to this week's game between, let's just say, the Jaguars and the Eagles. And this is the week that Carson Wentz can't play.
Right.
Wait a minute. Why did I buy the ticket?
Exactly right. Hey, by the way, Steve, we have an old friend on the line. Doug from Wellsboro's back here.
Doug. How is Doug doing? We've been sitting here waiting for your call. All right. Phone getting dust on it.
Hey, I've been great. How are you guys been?
Doing really well. Thanks. How are you?
Having Bob on the show has been some of Steve's best work this last week. Some have been some of the best shows.
That's the way Bob is.
Thank you, Doug, my good friend. And how are the Wellsboro High School football team going to be this year?
Same story. We've got one really good player who may end up mid-level somewhere, but once we lose him, or if we move out, move on to districts or something like that, we're kind of out of our league. So that's how it'll go. We'll go through the northern tier just fine, but once you get past that, we're in trouble.
Doug, I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, your Wellsboro team came to Danville to play a top-ranked Danville Ironman football team, and the Ironman got their proverbial heads handed to them. So I never discount those northern tier teams.
Well, it's like I told you guys before. I mean, we're in the same district as Southern, so we're only going to go so far, and then that's going to be it.
That's probably true.
Hey, Steve, I got a question for you.
Oh, it's my turn.
Jared Parker, tell me about him.
Jared Parker, the first time I ever really ran into him, he was the interim head coach at Purdue when they were going through all that bad stuff in 2016. And he did a good job of keeping the program together. Well, along the way, he's gone to various places. His last stop was Duke as a wide receiver coach. That's really been his bread and butter, to be a wide receiver coach. And you can tell the passion he brings to it. he's the kind of guy that gets out there and in the drill, when they're just throwing the ball, suddenly he's going over and he's lining up as the defensive back. He's very active. He's a high-energy guy. And I'll tell you right now, I like what I've seen from the receivers so far in camp very much.
What does he do with special teams? Anything?
Well, everybody takes a role in special teams. So Joe Lorig runs the special teams overall, but several coaches get involved in various parts of special teams. So, for example, yesterday they were running a three-way drill. And in the three-way drill, I think Tim Banks was with a group, Parker was with a group, Brent Pry was with a group. Then they rotated them through, and they had six groups going. So they had six assistant coaches involved in it.
What do you think? The last couple years, special teams have been such a disappointment. Blake Gilligan's been inconsistent. Is it going to be better this year?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I think getting Joe Lorig in there to run the special teams, and that's under that category of the pros pro coming in. I like the philosophy of it. Let's start with that. They have the talent. You and I both know they have the talent on special teams. Yeah, that to me is not even an issue about whether or not they have the talent, because they do. And there are certain moments on special teams. Let's give you an example. It was a mixed bag. So the field goal kicking part last year was inconsistent early, good middle, good late, then in the bowl game, struggled. The punt return for a touchdown in the bowl game, crusher. That can't happen. That can't happen. Yet you flip it to the other side, okay, against Appalachian State, for example. James made Appalachian State on a ball kicked out of bounds, re-kick it, and Hamler brought it back 58 yards. And it set up a score that won the game for him. So it was not a complete problem, but it was one that needed to be, that everything else had to be corrected. And I think Lorig's going to correct a lot of it. He is really very, very detailed-oriented, I think it's very safe to say, as a special teams coach. And he's universally respected.
The special teams have improved every place he's been. Isn't that correct?
Yes. Everywhere you've gone, and the numbers you look at Memphis were outstanding last year. Not only just conference rank, but also national rank.
Okay.
You know, one of the... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bob.
One of the things that, Steve, you talked about early on with Bill O'Brien was the lack of scholarship players to fill out the special teams. And we weren't expecting a lot out of special teams 6 years ago, say, 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that excuse anymore. We've got the full complement. We've got, as you said, the talent. Isn't it just a matter of putting it together?
It's a matter of putting it together along the way. And if you're a starter, for example, you really have to be on two special teams, unless you're the quarterback. So they want starters to be on a max, not always, but a max of two special teams. Because if you're going to value that part of the game, you better value having the best players out there. And that's something that you looked at. Urban Meyer was essentially the special teams coach at Ohio State. Well, when I sat down and I would look at what Ohio State was doing on special teams personnel-wise, he had starters all over the place on their special teams. The game that they won against Penn State at Ohio State 2 years ago, and the key was the block punt. Who blocked the punt? Denzel Ward, fourth overall pick in the NFL draft.
Absolutely critical.
What's the matter with your Red Sox, Steve?
Starting pitching, really pitching overall. Starting pitching has not been great. Starting pitching ERA not been great. And I was never comfortable with the bullpen anyway. Last year in the playoffs, all five starters for the Red Sox played pivotal bullpen roles at one point or another, which meant that they weren't trusting their bullpen even then when they were making a run as the best team in the game. So it comes down to pitching more than anything else.
What has happened to Chris Sale?
If I knew, I would be emailing Chris Sale, and I would be telling him. I think that for the most part, his fastball's been good. The slider, which is really like a bread and butter out pitch for him, he has not been as consistent with that as he has been in the past. And last night, I guess he struck out 13 against the Angels. I mean, I think he threw a one hitter over 8 innings. So, to me, that's the biggest part of it. That's the biggest part.
Okay. Well, Bob,
he gives up too many home runs too.
I'm sorry, there, Doug.
Sam, Bob, I've listened all week, and I don't just listen during Penn State football. I listen all year. I just don't call in.
Well, we've been waiting for you, my friend.
I heard you the other day. One last thing. It's only 1 year to the Olympics, so I'll be looking forward to the special the Olympics preview produced by you-know-who.
Yes, in fact, they're going to be airing, I think, starting in July, actually in June of next year at 3 a.m.
He's already scouting the women's javelin qualifiers.
Yeah.
Does the suit have a segment prepared now?
He always has something prepared. We're just not sure what.
And it's usually something we have to overcome.
Yeah. That's why we have the bleep button here.
All right. Well, thanks, you guys, for your time.
Thanks, Doug. Always appreciate you. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills, some have a preference for garlic.
Love the garlic.
Indeed, second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And after a two-week hiatus, the king has returned.
What up? How's it going?
Sounding better than ever.
What you been up to?
Me? They point me toward the field. I talk.
Good. Yep. How's the weather there?
Here? Gorgeous. I mean,
yeah,
really, can't be any nicer.
Here.
Yeah, can't be any nicer.
Well, how's the Red Sox going for you?
I'm really glad they won last year.
Oh, they suck, man. Oh, my God. They're bad.
The pitching is just really bad on that team.
Well, the thing is they don't stink. They're really, really good. That's what makes them stink, you know?
Because they're really, really good.
And God knows what happened this year, and it was right from the start. I mean, on paper, they should beat everybody. But on the field, I mean, Alex Cora made all the right calls last year, and this year he can't get out of his own way.
Yeah.
And he's lousy with the media. I don't know why the Red Sox do this every single time. They win a World Series, and they come in last place the next year.
It makes it exciting. I know.
Yeah.
It makes it exciting.
I mean, they won't be in last place this year, but you can call it that if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
they
might as well
with
be
that
less.
Roster and with that payroll. Good Lord.
Yeah. Right.
David Price gets $1 million a start. Can you imagine that? You start off playing Little League, and you're a pitcher and all that, and someday you'll get $1 billion every time you take the mound. That's just unfathomable. But I was looking at the standings the other day. You know, the Phillies are getting robbed. Not robbed in a bad way. That is the best division in baseball, or the toughest division in baseball. I don't know if it's the best division, but the toughest. They got four teams over 500. So you're playing those teams 18 times a year, and they're all every game they play is competitive. Where you can't say that about the Yankees or the Red Sox or Texas or especially the Dodgers. Every team in their division's under 500.
So, right. That's because they have to play the Dodgers.
Huh?
That's because they have to play the Dodgers.
Oh, I know, but I mean, Dodgers every team, the Dodgers aren't that good. They're good, but they're not that good. They
right,
play under 500 teams. You know, the 80 of their games are against teams under 500 in their division.
Right. I know.
You know, if you're the Yankees, at least you're playing the Red Sox and you're playing Tampa Bay. They're good teams. There's 40 tough games right there. But if who's leading the National League East? Atlanta?
Atlanta. Yeah, the Braves.
Yeah. I mean, every team in the division's over 500 except for the Marlins. So it's that's a tough goal. You've got a tough game every single night. And the Phillies have hung right in there, so good for them.
Well, they've hung in there, but you know, it also tells me that on a team that needed major retooling in the offseason, they made every move they made I liked. I thought they made every right move.
They tried to make their team better, and they did. They succeeded.
And they made their, but it also tells you how far away they were. Because they haven't made enough moves to get to the top.
Yeah.
That's how far away they were.
What you strongly need, and you see it with the Yankees, is you need a very good farm system. You know, Yankees, my gosh, watch a Yankee game and tell me how many players you ever heard of.
Oh, what's happened with them is amazing. Every time you turn around, somebody is hitting a home run.
And well, they've hit 19 home runs in four games.
It's been remarkable to watch.
It's not. It's close to one. That's almost five home runs a game.
That's why I don't blame Brian Cashman at all at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
We're not unloading and getting rid of guys because guess what? I think he knows he's got guys for the long haul that are really good.
They've been good all year, and that's without Stanton. That's with Judge has been hurt. You know, Judge isn't 100%.
Sanchez has been banged up.
Who's the second baseman? Great. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, DJ LeMahieu. They got him in a trade from Colorado. So
he is great.
And I knew when they acquired him, he was a next-level difference maker.
He is good a ball player has been in New York in a long time. He is made for New York City.
Every time
he's on, if there's a guy on base, he's got a 50% chance of getting him in. He's makes contact every time. He's a great baseball player. They just got DeGregorius. They've got players you never heard of who are hitting home runs every game.
Oh, I know. I mean, Urshela, you're like, really?
How about Texas? Texas got, what's his name, the pitcher. So.
Done by Houston.
Yeah, Houston.
Getting Greg. Yeah. It's interesting because Ricky Ronnie, Penn State's offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Ricky's a big baseball fan, loves baseball. So after practice, let's say Friday, Wednesday, he pulled me aside. He says, hey, just for a minute, I got to talk some baseball with you. He says, can you think of a better big three in the last 25 years on one rotation? I said, no, to be honest with you, I said, to me, it's the best since Cuellar, McNally, Palmer, and Dobson with the Orioles in 71.
Yeah. The Yankees have had some good ones. The Red Sox were good last year. Oh.
Yeah, but something about this group. Wow.
Yeah. Houston's going to be tough to beat.
They have three number ones on one staff. And
they're going to be tough to beat, and it's probably going to be them and the Yankees.
Verlander, this is how good Verlander's been. You want to know how good Verlander's been? Verlander has given up 5.5 hits per 9 innings. Now, the problem he's had has been home runs. He's given up 29 home runs, but the guy's giving up 5.5 hits per 9 innings.
Nobody on base, you know.
That's Walter Johnson-esque.
pitcher doesn't mind giving up home runs if no one's on base.
Yeah, if nobody's on base, they'll run.
Yeah. So, no, Houston's deep. They're gonna be a tough out. I don't see anyone in the National League who can compete with either the Yankees or Houston. Now, I may be wrong, but I'm just saying both teams are so. They have depth. You know, somebody can get hurt.
Yeah.
The Yankees don't have the pitching. That's the Yankees starting pitching is not very good. So,
but once I get to if the Yankees can turn games into five inning games.
Yeah.
If you can turn into a five inning game and you can go to your bullpen game in and game out in the playoffs, you'll win the series.
You think so?
As long as if they can turn into a five inning game where through five innings they're up 2-1, 1-0, something, where they've got just enough, their bullpen is good enough to hold the last four innings.
Yeah, you're right, but I'd feel more comfortable with three stud starters.
I'd rather have three guys come in when I need them.
You know,
absolutely.
I wouldn't want to depend on my bullpen to win a World Series. I'd like to have that starter who can go out and give me two shutout games, and have a strong bullpen just sitting there seething to come in.
I mean, that's where the Red Sox got lucky last year. Suddenly, Joe Kelly and Matt Barnes pitched better, and all five starters became relievers in the postseason.
There's a big name right there, Joe Kelly. He was a big part of that team last year.
He was.
And they don't talk enough about him. He would go out and put the kibosh on teams, and he loved playing in Boston. And they didn't re-sign him. So.
No.
They are missing some things that everyone says is the same team as last year, but it's
no,
not.
No, they're missing stuff. No, they're missing stuff.
And that guy, his name eludes me now, Peterson, first baseman, the one who was the MVP of the World Series.
Oh, yeah, Steve Pierce.
He's been hurt year. And
yeah,
even when he played, he was only batting like 180. He was clutch for them last year.
He was.
You know, he was a big part of what they did last year. His leadership, you know, he was a veteran. And sometimes it's just that special couple players that really make a difference. Kelly was, you know, he'd throw at anybody. And he had 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But I was surprised they didn't re-sign him. I was not surprised they didn't sign the closer. I think he's hurt now. So.
Yeah, he's on the IL for the Cubs, yeah.
Right. But they made a huge mistake not signing a closer. A huge mistake.
No doubt. No doubt about that, because they've actually had, how many leads have they blown now, 20?
Oh, gosh.
That's
their record. There's a lot of weird things with them this year. Look at their home record.
It's under 500.
Their haven. You didn't want to play in Fenway Park. It's the toughest place to. I don't think they're even 500. If they are,
no, they aren't.
500 or one game above 500 at home, which is unheard of. And
right.
Nobody can figure it out. They can't play at home. They lose at home. It's a very strange year for them.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah.
I
haven't seen that kind of home. I haven't seen that kind of home problem since the suit was talking to us in the conference room. But that's a different story. All right. So, Matty Ice, stop laughing. This is going to be your compadre when you're working with him in the Temple game.
That's as true, yes.
Yeah? Just remember, lean on Doug. All right.
Duly noted.
Off to a good start. Weekend to camp. Off to a good start. In fact, I think they're practicing right now. I don't think I'm going to get a chance to see them today because... this is the last day of classes for the summer session, and they've got a graduation coming up. So This will be one day I won't get a chance to see them. So one time they go early. But they've been good. They've been good. Very athletic. Very athletic and flat out run. Not sure yet.
Really?
It's still, yep. Look, you don't have to make a decision. When you're in a situation like this, you don't have to make a decision until right around, I'd say, August 20 to 22. You're saying, well, why that range? Because at some point, you do have to make a decision to break into scout teams. So who's gone to the scout team side of it? And you got to determine who your ones and twos are at that point. It does get, and now you've got to start preparing your game plan right around the 22nd or 23rd to then get ready for your opening game. Well, there has to be a quarterback at the helm of that. So they've got, I'd say, what's today, the 9th? I'd say they got maybe 10 or 11 more days to go through and take a long look at both guys and see which one they think should do it. And they haven't scrimmaged yet. I'm very comfortable with either one. And they haven't scrimmaged yet. They're not scrimmaging until this weekend at some point. Right. Because, again, they're only a week in. So this weekend they'll have their first scrimmage, and then at that point that'll start you on the road to which way you want to go.
Did you see Hard Knocks?
I have not seen the opening because I had a game the other night.
I got HBO so I could see Hard Knocks because it's supposed to be the best one ever. Oh, my God. It was awful. Man, has it changed. The NFL has changed. They can't hit, you know.
That's right.
And Gruden runs at least after the first show, he just runs a country club for these guys. There's no discipline whatsoever. He tells them, I got two rules. Don't be late and don't give any coach lip or something like that. And that's it. I don't have any other rules. You know, the players, it's like a country club. The whole show is about them having parties and going to parties and two guys riding a horse through a vineyard. And I'm like, God, I bought HBO for this. I was like, God, what happened to the best one was Rex Ryan. That was good.
Well, let me put it this way. When's the last time Gruden had a winning season?
Oh, I know. Last time, he's never had. He won a Super Bowl. That's it.
And has not had a winning season since winning it.
Yeah. It made him who he is, but gosh, I'm telling you, that you watch the show, you're like, there's nothing going on here that makes you believe. I mean, that idiot Antonio Brown, he shows up at practice in a hot air balloon. Yeah. You know? And people think, I hate to beat the drum slowly for people because everybody hates the Patriots, but I can guarantee you there would not, whoever flew in on a hot air balloon to a Patriot practice would be taken away in handcuffs. They would never play for Bill Belichick, ever.
As soon as it landed, they would land on waivers.
Oh, yeah. He cut them. He'll cut anybody.
There'll be two landings, one where the basket hits the ground.
The team, and nobody is bigger than the team. And that's what Antonio Brown does. It's bizarre. He thinks he's something. That dude can't run. His feet are so messed up, he can't run.
I know. And again, you can't be bigger than the organization. We've tried to tell this to the digital media department over and over again, Matty.
Yes, that's true.
So, poor Matty. He feels like every time I bring this up, he's caught in the middle.
It is what it is, I guess.
Hey, we just can't keep doling out the facts here, Matty. Come on.
I'm just always ready, as I always say.
I got fires to put out. he puts out so many fires, I feel like the entire town's ablaze. I think thou complaineth too much. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, we got preseason football. We got the Steelers coming up tonight on the Valley, 100.9 the Valley. And as I said earlier, I don't know how you feel, Kevin, or how you feel, Bob, or you feel, Matt. As each year goes by, I struggle more and more to find a reason to watch preseason NFL football.
I'm the total opposite.
The players haven't even hit yet, you know, because the league won't allow them to hit in practice. So it's like,
well, no, it's not the league that won't allow them to hit. It is the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever, whoever it is, that's why Hard Knocks is not what it used to be. The players can't even put pads on. They're just running around the field. The NFL's brand is, we'll see what happens. It got better last year, so let's hope that it's, I don't know if the new rules, I don't even know what the new rules are, but I don't know.
They're doing everything they can to stay away from head injuries as often as possible. So no two-a-days. Hitting is very limited in camp. Actually, if you want, I would say the first 2 weeks of any season, high school, college, or pro, the first 2 weeks when you're actually playing the games is when the defense gets its tackling in. Usually by the third game, now you're at least, quote, used to tackling. And tackling across the country improves. I always love when I hear Penn State fans, and our tackling is this. Have you watched the other games? You can't just be tunnel visioned on your team. Have you watched the other games? Nobody's tackling well the first 2 weeks.
I don't understand it. What I understand is money. And the NFL and the colleges and all that are faced with huge lawsuits. And I don't think they really care about the players, whether they get hurt or not. Because if they did, they would, college, not necessarily the same as the pros, they would be much more stringent with their drug testing. It was Fran Tarkenton who said on Sirius Radio a couple years ago, he said, as long as they allow these players to keep getting juiced up, and they allow them to because it makes the league look better, you're not going to stop the concussions. These guys are so strong and so fast, they're killing each other. And you can cut it down all you want. They're only cutting it down in preseason so they can get into the regular season. But they don't care if they get it. They just don't want lawsuits against them. But these guys, come on. You could do 1,000 arm curls a day, and you would not get biceps like James Harrison. Don't tell me he's not all juiced up. Some of these guys, their biceps are so huge, and it's not from doing 1,000 arm curls. Watch when they retire. Look at Gronkowski, how much smaller he's gotten after he finished playing. He looks like a wide receiver now. He doesn't look like a tight end.
I'm just trying to think if I've ever done 1,000 arm curls in my life.
But you know what I'm saying? They can take pads away in preseason and do all the crap they want to do. It doesn't really matter as long as they allow them to be juiced up and playing on a level that is unheard of. Because you've got guys who, you remember Rosie Greer?
Of course, I've met Rosie Greer.
He was a big deal because he was the only player in the NFL that was 300 pounds.
That's right.
And it wasn't muscle, you know? He was a big, big man. I'm sure a lot of it was muscle, but he weighed 300 pounds. That was a big deal. Now, these guys are 325 across the line. And they're not. They're ripped. I mean, they got six-pack abs. You're like, how do you, you know, where did that come from? It didn't come from doing sit-ups. And then when they retire, look at Singleton, the one who was the center for the Colts.
Oh, Jeff Saturday,
Jeff Saturday. I'm sorry. I'm horrible with names. My gosh, he was huge. Look at him now, you know? He's probably 60 pounds lighter than he was when he played. He looks more like a cornerback or something. Whatever. That's just my opinion. Who cares?
All right. There we go. Hey, we got to head to the weekend. Be good. Bob,
Alrighty.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Matty Ice.
Always a pleasure.
Bye, Matt.